Okay, if you are a child between the ages of 3 and 6, or an adult who feels like you're between the ages of 3 and 6, we're going to dismiss you to children's church at this time. Well, according to my notes, this is the 12th lesson that we're having in Exodus. And yes, it took us 12 lessons, 12 weeks, 3 months to get to Mount Sinai from when Moses was born in Exodus chapter 1. And this is not only the most pivotal point in Exodus, it is arguably the most important part in all of the Old Testament. And you may ask, why is Mount Sinai so important? And the reason is what we talked about last week. Yes, we could talk about the fact that it was where the burning bush was when God first came to Moses in Exodus. It also was the place where God told Moses, he said, "Hey, when you get back to this place and you worship here with the Israelites, then you'll know that I am God." We also talked about it was where the Ten Commandments and the law were given at Mount Sinai. But really, the big reason why Mount Sinai is so important is because it's where God said, "I am coming to be with you." And when God came down, he was really actually very strict. He told Moses to tell the Israelites, he says, "Consecrate yourselves, get ready, prepare yourself, for I'm coming down. And by the way, when I come down, don't get near the mountain. Don't touch the mountain." He went so far to say is, if you touch the mountain, the person who touches it is going to die, but don't touch the person who touched the mountain. You stone them, you shoot them with an arrow, but you have nothing to do with the place where I have been. And even after that happened, we talked about in class, after God had given Moses that command and said, "Don't let anybody touch the mountain," he went even further and told Moses, he says, "Now, Moses, I want you to know that don't let anybody come up here. There's going to be this cloud, and there may be this desire among the people to storm up the mountain." And he says, "Don't do it because my wrath will lash out against those people." And it sounds a little crazy, doesn't it? As we read about the warning of death, and God warned and cautioned and threatened that if a group came up, that his wrath would burst forth, does it seem a little confusing? Do you want to ask the question, why all the anger and the violence, God? Why all the wrath and the threats of annihilation? The fact is, God is holy. You can no more come into the presence of God than you can frolic on the edge of the Niagara Falls, dancing on the edge. You're not going to survive. You're better taking off a hang glider into the eye of a tornado than to see the face of God. God is all powerful. It's not a cliche, it's not an understatement, and it's not a statement that can be easily understood. And because of that, we oftentimes want to push back a little bit. We question God and even his motive. We think, well, maybe he's mean, or maybe he's arrogant. That's not the case. It's just the fact that God is holy. So, I know we have some thrill seekers in here. We have some people who like to do some crazy things. Last week, I talked about the time that I jumped out of an airplane. That's about as crazy as I thought I would ever get. And then I had kids, and then realized that every day is like jumping out of a perfectly good airplane when you step out of your bed and try to meet those six little eyes staring back at you. But I think some of us like to live a life on the edge. Although, I just want to take a poll here. I want to make sure how many of you would like to take a rubber boat down A lava river. Show of hands. Who wants to do this? I knew Kip and Callie would be like, I'm all over that. Okay. Nora joined in. She's like, yeah, that would be really great. Okay. But let's talk a little bit about lava. Lava is hot. It is molten rock. It comes in at somewhere around 2200 degrees Fahrenheit. That is several hundred degrees hotter than it normally gets in your chimney when you've started a fire in your fireplace. It is hot enough that it will melt rocks. Okay? In context, the temperature of your car can reach about 50 degrees hotter than the outside on a hot, sunny day. Now, I don't know if you remember this, but I think it was last summer when we had the really, really hot weather. Was that last summer or the summer before? I mean, we were getting close to 110 degrees. It was really hot. So if you do the math, if it's 110 outside and you add 50 degrees from your car, it gets to 160 degrees. How many of you have gotten into your car without starting it up in July and opening up the door and getting in and closing the door and sitting there for about 10 seconds? Maybe you're fumbling with your keys and you can't get the car started, and you know you're going to start the car, you're going to turn on the AC, and it's going to blow out air that feels like a hairdryer just right in your face, right? And how suffocating that feels at 160 degrees. They go on to say that your steering wheel in that kind of temperatures can reach up to 200 degrees Fahrenheit. How many of you have made the mistake of grabbing your steering wheel and be like, oh, that is the worst thing that I've ever done in my life? Lava is more than 10 times hotter than that. Your wooden boat would immediately burst into flames, and your aluminum boat, which can withstand 1200 degrees Fahrenheit, would melt the moment it touched that lava. Now, no one argues that lava is inherently mean or just downright arrogant. What we know is a fact is that lava is hot and it's powerful. And if you want to stay alive, you have to keep a safe distance from it. In Exodus chapter 19, God's warning isn't underscoring the fact that He's a mean God. It's highlighting the fact that He is a holy and powerful God. In Exodus 19, as we talked about last week in class, does one other thing. It shows us the importance and the power of the cross. The sacrifice of Jesus on the cross does not make God less mighty. It just makes us more holy. It sets us apart so that we can be in the presence of God. It doesn't dilute His power. It doesn't take away His might. It simply allows us to be in His presence because of the sacrifice of Jesus. You can not only be near God because of the cross, but because of Jesus and His sacrifice, His power can live inside as you, in you as well. It's the power of God living inside you. It's like lava in your veins. That's what Jesus did when He gave up His life on the cross. And so what is our response? What do we do, and how does this work? How can we have that power? How can we come into the presence of God? What saves us, prepares us, consecrates us so that we can be in the presence of the Almighty, powerful God? Well, there's actually several schools of thought. And if you've been in a church building for more than a few weeks, you've heard at least one of these sides. If you grew up in a place where I did, you always heard one side. And if you grew up in another place another time, you might have heard another side. But one of them, of course, is the grace of God. It is the grace of God that allows us to be in His presence. But others will say, well, we have grace, but there's also this necessity for works. The song that we sang growing up, trust and obey. If you just trust and obey, then you can be in the presence of God. There's others will say, but you also have to have faith too. And we go to Hebrews 11:6. It says, without faith, it is impossible. You can't please God if you don't have faith. He that comes to God must believe that He is, and He rewards those who seek Him. But how does this work? Is it grace? Is it works? Is it faith? How does this all come together? Well, I'm going to need some help here, but I want to do an analogy. And so, Miss Nora, will you come join me for just a minute? I need to see if I can get some help. And while we're doing this, Wyatt, I'm going to have you move this camera over, see if you can get in here. Okay. Nora, why don't you tell everybody a little bit about yourself? Tell everybody your name.
Nora.
Okay, Nora, and how old are you?
9 years
You're 9 years old. And you have already completed culinary school, right? Do you know what culinary school is?
No.
Okay. Have you ever made yourself a sandwich before?
No.
You've never made a sandwich. Okay, so this is going to be a learning process for all of us. So what we're going to do this morning is we are going to make a sandwich. Okay? So, this is not going to be, we're not making like a Reuben, nothing like fancy. No, we're not going to have like a foot-long meatball with cheese. We're just a plain old ordinary PB&J sandwich. Okay, so here we go. We've got everything we need. Oh, wait, what do we need? Okay, so what's this? Okay, bread and a knife, okay, and then we have a plate, and then we have this.
Jelly.
What kind is this?
Strawberry.
It's strawberry. Guys, if you're putting grape jelly on your PB&J, you're doing it wrong. Okay, I'm just going to tell you right now. You're wrong, okay? Okay, if you're Elvis and you're putting on bananas, that ain't right. Okay, it's strawberry jelly. I know grape is like, that's the fruit of like the Bible, but we're all about the strawberry, right? It's the only fruit that has the seeds on the outside. So that's why we use it. And then we have this. Eat peanut butter. And I've already been chastised. Thanks, Becky Kessner. She says your object lesson has already failed because you have Peter Pan peanut butter. And she says, real moms choose Jeff. Thank you. So we're going to make a peanut butter and jelly sandwich. Oh, I do need to ask this. Okay, you're not allergic to peanuts, right?
No.
Okay, good. Okay, just checking. I know we have a few in here who are, so Kip and Callie, keep your distance. Don't come up here later on. Just stay away. So here we go. We're going to make, and you said you've never made one before. So the first thing we're going to do is we're going to take some peanut butter. Okay, if you just kind of dig that in there. Okay. And, I guess just put it there, maybe. Yep. Okay, that's not very much. Come on, let's do a little bit more. We're going to get that protein in our body. There. Oh, wow. You're risking breaking that knife. That's a way to do it. Okay, there you go. We got a lot of peanut butter. Okay, we're going to try to wipe this off the best we can. We don't want to contaminate our jelly with this. Okay, so that's close enough. Okay, now we need some jelly, right? Because it's butter and jelly, right? Okay, there, dig in deep. Oh, that is all goodness right there. That is just not coming off. There we have a little. I'm going to tip it for you. We're just going to just kind of shovel it on there. Just, that is, oh, yeah. That is awesome. Now, I'm going to tell you something else. Some people are going to tell you that it tastes better when you mix it together. They're wrong. Okay, don't mix them together. You need to have that bite where you can taste the peanut butter and then the jelly. You don't want it all mixed together. But we'll kind of put it on top like that. That looks good. Okay. What else do we need? Okay, we need the bread. I knew that. It's just checking to make sure you knew. Now, I'm the kind of person, I don't mind using like the end piece. I don't mind at all, but I want to wait till the end because that end piece like keeps the rest of the bread good, right? So we're going to keep that in there, and we're going to go ahead and grab this. Have you two pieces? Okay. There you go. And if you'll just kind of, I don't know, it's peanut butter, it's jelly,
and sandwich. So just go ahead and just put that on top. Okay, there's one piece. Now, would you put that on top? Okay, there you go. Now, I think if you mash it down really good. Okay, there you go. You can enjoy your peanut butter and jelly sandwich.
Now, she learned how to make a PB&J. So whenever she says, hey, Mom, I'm hungry, you can say, go make a sandwich.
You take the peanut butter, and then you take the jelly, and then you have your sandwich. Is that, you think that's going to be a good sandwich? Sure. You think it's going to taste good? Okay. You don't eat sandwiches? Okay, so you just there. Oh, wow. That's there we go. So there you have it. There's your, I didn't spread that out well enough. Okay, so there's your PB&J sandwich right there. There you have it. So now you can have that and you can eat. I will make you eat. You know what? I'll let you take the plate with you. Is that how a normal sandwich looks like, by the way? What's wrong with it? Oh, why didn't you tell me that? That was really important, right? Okay, so I think we can probably fix this. We're just going to pick this up and, oh, that's a mess. So there you go. You can, you know what? We'll just leave it here because you probably don't want to take that back since you don't eat sandwiches, right? You did a great job. Nora, thank you so much for your help. You did awesome. If you want a good sandwich, Nora doesn't eat sandwiches, so I'm thinking she probably can't make you one. But she's learning. She knows how. Definitely now. Like, if anybody asks, hey, what did you learn at church on Sunday? I learned how to make a PB&J sandwich in front of 100 people. I mean, it was just a great experience. Okay, so this is where I think we're going to get back to Sunday morning. We're going to get back to the Bible. We're going to get back to Exodus chapter 20. What do PB&Js have anything to do with Mount Sinai? Is there any correlation? You see, the thing is, we need the proper ingredients. We need things like peanut butter, which could be construed as works. It's, you know, it's the protein, it's the hard working stuff. We need the jelly because that's the faith, but we also need the bread too, right? The bread is the grace of God. And I want to argue that bread has to be the grace of God, not only because Jesus talks about being the bread of life. But we have to understand that if you're going to make a peanut butter and jelly sandwich, what has to come first? The bread has to come first. I didn't know that, but Nora taught me that. The bread comes first. That grace is the thing that has to be there before we do anything else. We could even say that bread is the foundation of the peanut butter and jelly sandwich, just like grace is the foundation of our relationship with God. So let's talk about the Ten Commandments. Why do people get so upset about posting Ten Commandments, Ten Laws, Ten Rules in a public place? Well, I guess we could argue that some of them, especially the first four, are very monotheistic in nature. They talk about having one God and no other gods and not creating other gods. And that bothers some people. But really, half of them are basically essential to a healthy society. We could argue that six of them, maybe even just five, are like, those are good things to have. Now, while laws vary from state to state, there are a few that you don't even have to check on when you travel across the Texas border. Or if you decide to go even further and end up in the not-so-great state of Arkansas, go Razorbacks? Right, Derek? Or if you want to go even further and cross the mighty Mississippi, roll through the Crimson Tide, and land on the beaches of Florida, there are certain laws that you don't have to question at all. You can travel to all the 50 states and all 195 countries in the world, and they still have some of the same laws, like don't steal and don't lie and don't kill. So why the beef with the Ten Commandments? Can people honestly argue that the world would be a better place if we lied, stole, and killed more often? Does anyone believe that a key to a healthy family is dishonoring your parents and cheating on your spouse? Can we fix all the world's problems with jealousy and lust and desiring to have what belongs to other people? Of course not. The Ten Commandments are important, but they are the peanut butter. Did you get that? The Ten Commandments are important, but they are built on a greater foundation. And this is evident in the book of Exodus, because we know that the law did not come first. And some of you are going to say, whoa, that's not right. We had the law first. No, we didn't. You're thinking, well, Old Testament law, New Testament grace. Well, then you've forgotten, you've overlooked, you haven't noticed, you missed the fact that the Old Testament is full of grace. Before Mount Sinai, before the law, before the commandments, what did God do? God offered grace to a people. And He delivered them out of the slavery that they were in. That's grace that came before. Before the laws, God looked at His people. He heard their cries and He saw their suffering. And He says, I'm going to give those people something. I'm going to give them something that they don't deserve. I'm going to deliver them out. I don't have to. I don't owe them anything. They don't know me, but I want to come into relationship. And grace came before the law. You talk about the Garden of Eden. What's the one thing everybody thinks about when God says, do not eat of that tree? That's a law. But before He gave that law, grace was offered when He created and loved and named His children. When He looked down at Adam and He saw his suffering and He said, he can't be alone. If that's not a kick in the shin to all of us guys, then we missed out. God looked at mankind. He looked at man. He said, these guys can't make it. We got to give him a woman who can be his partner, and together they can be in relationship. Guys, our wives are grace from God. Before there was don't eat of this, He looked and said, I'm going to offer grace and love to my people. The grace of God needs to be first. It is the bread on which works and faith rest. We have to show God and His love and His grace first. It's why people don't like the Ten Commandments. If the first thing we do is shove in their face, don't do this and don't do that and don't do this and don't do that, all they say is, I don't want these rules. I don't want these laws. Quit telling me how to live my life. And God understood that. He didn't start off with laws. He didn't start off with rules. He started with love and He offered grace. That's what comes first. We can spend all day preaching and pounding on pulpits. We can go to our legislator and we say, we've got to make these laws. We've got to tell people, you have to stop aborting babies. We can tell people, you have to take marriage seriously. It has to be between a man and a woman. And if we all keep saying, oh, and if we can just get prayer back in school, that's what we need. If we keep pushing down laws down people's faces, all they're going to say is, I don't want your laws.
But what comes first? It's grace. And it's love.
It's showing mercy. For the people out there and in here, it's the grace of God that should lead us to follow Him.
And it should lead us to believe
and to trust and to obey. We can't follow enough laws to earn God's grace. His grace comes first.
That's what we need in our lives. And that's what the people outside of these walls need too. They need to understand that we serve a God of grace. A God who gives us what we don't deserve, and a God of mercy who doesn't give us what we do deserve. It's what compels us to follow and to trust, to seek and to praise. You're going to go out this week and you're going to be tempted to think about all these different laws that we need to institute and all these laws that we need to mandate. But what comes first is just a love for people. And not always trying to find ways to put them in their place or get revenge or to laugh when things go badly for them. That's not what God did, and it's not what He calls us to. What He offered us first is His Son. From the very beginning, He said, "You people and your sin will cost me my Son. I'm going to do it anyway." Because grace comes first. This morning, we are all here because we believe in the grace of God. And my prayer for you is that grace will transform your life and you will be filled with the Holy Spirit because you're able to embrace that grace and say, you know what? God and His Holy Spirit can help me to go out into this world and to share that grace and to trust Him and to obey. This morning we're going to sing a song of invitation and of encouragement. And as we stand and sing this song, I just want you to be overwhelmed with the grace that God offers you. And because of that, you want to share it with other people. I want to encourage you to join me this morning as we stand and sing.